Mean Old Lion Media presents Pregnancy Pearls. Meet Dr. Nicole Plenty, a double board certified OBGYN and high risk pregnancy expert. She's brilliant, well researched, and feisty. Growing tired of seeing complications of pregnancy that could have been prevented, she wanted a way to empower women through knowledge because, as she says, all doctors aren't created equal. This quest to educate women birthed this podcast, Pregnancy Pearls with Dr. Plenty.
Thanks for listening to Pregnancy Pearls Podcast with me, Dr. Nicole Plenty, your favorite OBGYN and maternal fetal medicine specialist. So we're in full throttle in March, which is our month, Women's History Month. Well, let's not say our month, right? Because hopefully there are some dads or future dads that are listening to this as well. And dads, we appreciate you being all in and listening with us. I actually personally really do appreciate it. Share it with your other buddies. Maybe you can listen to Pregnancy Pearls while you're at the barbershop. Share the wealth of knowledge with your friends. But this month is definitely Women's History Month. So ladies, let's continue to celebrate us all month long. On a daily basis, I see patients who, after they get a little comfortable, they start to ask me the questions they didn't feel comfortable asking their midwives and OBGYNs. Several people also reach out via social media to ask questions they were afraid to ask their providers. So I thought we'd have a little girl talk today and talk about all the things you were too embarrassed to discuss with your women's health provider. Now, let me start by saying that you should feel comfortable with your provider. The person who does your women's health exam should be professional, but really like one of your best friends, right? You should be able to discuss your life situations with them when you're frustrated in your relationships, when you're feeling overwhelmed, when your body is changing and you don't know why or you need to know what to do, and when your mood is changing, etc. And if you cannot do that, you should really look at finding another provider that makes you feel more comfortable. Now, to jog your memory, if you're looking for a provider or looking to figure out who you can move on to because you don't feel comfortable with your provider, there are several different types of providers who provide women's health care. So your bread and butter go-to person that you know, first and foremost is going to be your obstetrician gynecologist, which is abbreviated as OBGYN. These are the people that provide obstetrical care to low and high risk patients. They do deliveries via vaginal delivery and C-section. They also can do some obstetrical procedures like cerclages and do prenatal care. OBGYNs also do the GYN part. So they're going to do your well woman exam, your pap smear, your breast exam. They're the people that are ordering your annual mammogram. They're the person you talk to about birth control, family planning. You can also talk to them about smoking cessation or tobacco use in pregnancy. And they also do a lot of management of primary care issues like hypertension and diabetes. Then you have your family medicine doctor that takes care of patients from cradle to grave. They take care of newborns that are straight out of the wound and all the way up to people that are elderly or need geriatric medicine. So post-retirement age. They also do even people that need to be on hospice and things like that. Family medicine doctor can take care of anything. They can take care of newborns. They can take care of your pediatric group patients. Well, woman exams, they can do your pap smear there. They can do your breast exam there. And obviously, they can also take care of your husband's prostate and things like that. So they do a lot of things, okay? They do a lot of preventative care. Usually, if you are more complicated from an OBGYN perspective, you're going to be referred to that OBGYN as opposed to family medicine doctor doing your delivery. Likewise, if you have a lot of a high complexity of medical conditions that require hospitalization, some family medicine physicians will see you in the hospital. Sometimes they'll go ahead and let the internal medicine colleagues handle your condition if it's in the hospital. Then you also have your internal medicine physicians, which can do some gynecologic care. So they can do pap smears, although that may not be their favorite thing to do. They can still do it. Most of your internal medicine physicians are going to manage hypertension, diabetes. They can also order your mammogram and do your breast exam and the pap smear. But a lot of internal medicine doctors do refer that to an obstetrician gynecologist or someone else that's specific to women's health and not do those things, but they can. They've been trained to do all of the things that included in adult medicine. Okay. But they don't do the prenatal care part of it. So they would be sort of like the GYN only if you're talking about well woman exam. Then you have your mid-level providers, which nurse practitioners, they can function with or without a supervising physician depending on the state that you live in. A lot of nurse practitioners here in Georgia work in collaboration with other OBGYNs and maternal fetal medicine providers to take care of low and high risk patients in conjunction with those providers, those OBGYNs and MFMs. But some nurse practitioners can function independently taking care of low risk patients that don't have a lot of risk in their pregnancy. And usually if they do, they will refer you to a physician if you are higher risk, but they do provide excellent prenatal care. Nurse practitioners most of the time don't do deliveries unless they're also a certified midwife and a nurse practitioner. So that's why for obstetrical care, they're usually working in conjunction with an OBGYN or family medicine doctor or maternal fetal medicine doctor, but they can do a lot of your gynecological care. Thing about your nurse practitioner for gynecological care is they're not going to be the people that do the surgeries. So if you need a surgery, a cyst removal, or an ovary removal, or your uterus removed, or a myomectomy, which is removing fibroids from your uterus, then they're going to refer you to a gynecologist or a GYN to do that actual surgery. But they can take care of you in the clinic very thoroughly and are excellent doing so. A nurse midwife, also excellent prenatal care. A lot of nurse midwives provide more holistic, natural approach to labor, although some do use, you know, standard medications for induction of labor. Midwives here at where I work at work in collaboration with the OBGYN. And most midwives do have some type of partnering collaboration, even if they are not working directly with one. They have someone that they have, you know, contracted with in the event that you're not delivering vaginally and need a C-section. Okay. But this is a great option if you are looking for obstetrical care and you are low risk. Now, nurse midwives are not going to do GYN care. They may do a pap smear in pregnancy, but they're not going to do a lot of GYN care. So they're not going to be the people that are looking at ovarian cysts, ovarian masses, or doing a whole bunch of like abnormal vaginal bleeding outside of pregnancy. That's not their thing. The midwifery part means they want to deliver babies. So they're not going to do the GYN part. So now that you know about all those different types of physicians, you realize that you do have a plethora of types of physicians depending on how high risk you are to choose from. Now, a maternal fetal medicine specialist like myself, I don't do any sort of general GYN. I do some gynecological care during pregnancy in that I evaluate ovaries and masses like fibroids and looking at tumors in the ovaries on ultrasound and helped to, you know, coordinate a plan for those. But most of the time I'm seeing people for the pregnancy or during pregnancy. So that's why I did not list myself as a women's health care provider because I don't do any general gynecological care. So do your research on those types of people that do women's health care. Look at videos to see who makes you feel the most comfortable. You can also look at patient reviews, but do me a favor and make sure you look at those reviews with a grain of salt. So people who have really bad experiences tend to write reviews more often than people that have good experiences, or people that have over the top good experiences also tend to write reviews. So then you end up sometimes catching the extremes of reviews and you missing the meat of it all. Okay, there's lack of subjective information in the middle. And so you have to read all of those comments with a grain of salt. So if somebody has a really bad review, but it's because, you know, their baby didn't survive or they got diagnosed with, you know, a major defect, their baby got diagnosed with a major defect, well, you know they're not going to have the best experience, right? Because you're getting bad news. So just read into those details, especially if it is a very negative review, to see why did they have that negative review? And is it something that you would have to be concerned about? Now, y'all, don't get me wrong. I'm really glad that you all feel comfortable enough to reach out and ask me questions. Actually, I am honored that you do. But I want you to make sure that the person that you go to and see in person, that is your person. Like, you get along with them. You feel comfortable asking questions and you feel comfortable with their answers because they're able to break down these answers to make it make sense. And if it doesn't, then you may need to switch providers. All right, so this episode, we're going to do something a little bit different. Since you guys have so many questions, we're going to talk about all the questions you have. And I'll give my honest, yet professional and educated opinion about each of these questions. All right, medical intern, what's our first question?
First question says, I'm 45 years old and recently got married to my husband, who is 5 years younger than I am. Every time we have intercourse, I experience vaginal bleeding. Is this normal or something I need to get checked out?
I can't really tell if it's normal or not normal without more normal details, but let's say that this is not because you're having sex on your period. And so you're remote from your period, meaning it's nowhere near around when you're having this intercourse. Sounds like you, listen, you got married, you're trying to keep up with that young man. Oh, okay, that may be what's going on. The question is, are you using some type of lubrication? Okay, the older we get, the thinner the vaginal mucosa or the vaginal tissue becomes. And if you haven't had sex in a really long time and now you're married and you have sex all the time, well, yeah, if you're not as lubricated, as moist, then it could cause friction when you are having sex. And that can cause little micro tears inside the vagina, which could look and appear as if you are bleeding, okay? First thing I usually tell people before we jump to conclusion is if it's like just a little bit of bleeding, like you wiped and was pink, that's what we're calling vaginal bleeding. Get some lubrication. Add lube every single time and see if that changes your life, okay? Honeypot has an amazing lubricant. Honeypot has amazing lubrication. I should be like the walking spokesperson to Honeypot because I tell patients about it all the time. Use the lube, okay? I don't care if you think you get wet enough. I don't care if he tells you you wet. Use lubrication because what happens as we age, the slightest little thing can turn us up off. We can dry up in the middle of sex. And it may be hard to get us back moistened, okay? So I always encourage patients, before we jump to conclusion, use lubricant. The second piece is, I do think that it's a value to reach out to your OBGYN and say, hey, every time I have sex, I am having bleeding. Can I have it checked out? Okay, so it's very important that we get the vagina inspected to make sure that we don't have any lesions there. We don't have any sores or, you know, anything that could be bleeding. And since you are bleeding, it's better to make sure we don't have any like little cut or tear in the vagina from trauma from sexual intercourse. So we do want to make sure you have a thorough exam and also make sure there's nothing on your cervix, like a lesion or precancerous cells that can cause you to have bleeding. But after your pelvic exam is completely normal, then it's a matter of making sure you use enough lubrication and also making sure that there's no tears or lesion in the vagina that could cause you to have bleeding. But most of the time, my patients in their mid-40s, you're getting close to the time of menopause. You're not as estrogenated as you once were. Lubricant is your friend. See if consistently using lubrication will help prevent that bleeding that you're having after sexual intercourse. All right, medical intern, what's our next question?
This one says, Dr. Plenty, I think I'm allergic to my boyfriend's penis. We've been together for 4 months now. Every time we have sex, I smell this fishy odor, and I'm not sure why. I shower right before we go to bed and don't smell the odor during the day. But when we have sex, I smell it. It doesn't seem to bother my boyfriend, but it bothers me. Do you think I have an STD?
It's hard for me to say, okay? Most STDs are not going to present with like a fishy odor. When I hear the word fishy, it makes me think bacterial vaginosis, which is just throwing your normal flora in the vagina off. It's just throwing your pH is thrown off. And that could be because you haven't gotten pretty much used to your boyfriend, or it could be because anything that throws your pH off. Use a different detergent, or maybe if you do a lot of foreplay, that can throw your pH off as well, which can make your vagina more basic than acidic. And that causes you to have an override of bacteria, which is bacterial vaginosis. And so bacterial vaginosis does present with a fishy odor. It's strong. And it's usually like a thin, you know, whitish, grayish discharge that you may see in your underwear or with wiping, you smell it, it smells sort of like ammonia. That is bacterial vaginosis. And that is usually cured with a course of Flagyl, or that's the same thing as metronidazole. It's not an STD. It is just an imbalance of the normal bacteria versus yeast in the vagina. And usually treatment with a week of Flagyl twice a day will help get rid of that real fast. But there are a couple things with prevention of like recurrent VV. Is making sure you're not doing things to make your floor off, right? You have a new boyfriend. All this stuff that we used to do, douching, that throws all your bacteria off. So douching, fingers. Some people have a lot of foreplay with fingers. Fingers have bacteria in it. You know, you have to make sure you're careful with the hygiene we practice. Are we showering before we have sex? If you do have fingers that go down into the vagina, making sure our hands are clean before we engage in foreplay. All those things are important not to throw our vaginal flora or the normal bacteria that lives in our vagina off. We don't want it thrown off. So we want to practice good hygiene. We want to make sure that we don't have fingers that are dirty in our vagina. Okay. We want to make sure that if it is a fishy odor, you contact your OBGYN so that they can do what's called a wet prep or wet mount to look for what's called clue cells under the microscope. And we'll see like normal cells from the vagina on the microscope. And then we see little bitty bacteria around 3/4 of the cell. That would be consistent with bacterial vaginosis. Okay. And that's very treatable with an antibiotic called metronidazole or Flagyl. Same thing. We just got to make sure that we're taking steps to practice good hygiene, but also to get tested and treated as quickly as we possibly can. Is this an STD? If it's bacterial vaginosis, it's not. But because there are some things that travel in packs, we also want to make sure that you don't have something else that's existing at the same time if you have a discharge. So your OBGYN will look and do a vaginal swab to make sure you don't have trichomonas, to also make sure that you don't have other STDs like HIV that does not present with a discharge, but they'll test you for that if you have a new sexual partner. And they'll also make sure you don't have gonorrhea or chlamydia, which are the two most common STDs that you could get. Okay. But it sounds like with the fishy odor and the, you know, new partner, it sounds like you're just throwing your bacterial flora off, and that's just normal bacterial vaginosis, which is easily treated with Flagyl. All right, medical intern, what's our next question?
This one says, I'm 22 weeks in my second pregnancy and can't have an orgasm. Prior to getting pregnant, my husband and I had the best sex. I always had an orgasm, but since getting pregnant this time, I just can't with oral or vaginal sex. I do not have any medical problems or history of STDs. This is my second pregnancy and going well thus far. My first pregnancy ended in a miscarriage at 11 weeks. My husband is able to have an orgasm with no problem, but I am personally very sexually frustrated. What should I do?
So I think it's very common for people to have decreased libido during pregnancy. Like your sex drive, for some people, is a little bit down, especially in the beginning of pregnancy and then again towards the end. Usually in the middle of pregnancy, like you are now, there is more of an urge to be sexually intimate. Now, just because you can't have an orgasm right now doesn't mean you'll never have an orgasm, especially if you've had orgasms before. The thing that gives me a little bit of pause is that you had a miscarriage at 11 weeks and this is your first pregnancy going into the second trimester. A lot of this, especially if you were able to reach orgasm before you got pregnant, but now it's an issue, maybe because of anxiety dealing with the loss of your last child. And so I always tell people when they have a miscarriage, always seek counseling to make sure you are mentally ready to get pregnant again. But obviously, sometimes God's timing has other plans, but it's still okay, even during pregnancy, to continue getting some type of counseling to make sure that you are mentally stable, even if you think you don't have anxiety, okay? It's still okay, and it doesn't hurt to get to talk to somebody about it. And then you may also need to talk to a sex therapist in addition to a counselor, depending on what that conversation is. Because it may be that you're not comfortable having sex because now you have a pregnant belly. It may be because you don't find yourself as sexually enticing because you're bigger. It may be, you know, all this could be very psychological because of how you feel about your own body image, plus compounded by the psychological impact of dealing with the loss of your previous child. So I do think that you should get counseling and or sex therapy depending on what's really irking your nerves inside. Now, there are things that you can try, right? Like you and your husband can try to do things that will definitely stimulate you, perhaps more foreplay, perhaps more clitoral stimulation, perhaps introduce toys into the bedroom to help encourage that intimacy. But if you had really good sex before you got pregnant and now you're all of a sudden not reaching orgasm, it doesn't seem like being intimate is the issue. It seems like reaching orgasm is the problem. And having an orgasm is a very psychological thing, right? You have to be in the right mindset to actually have an orgasm. And so some of this is dealing with what's deep down inside blocking you mentally from being able to connect with your husband. So I would encourage you to, if the toys and the clitoral stimulation don't work, to make sure that you are seeking some counseling to ensure that it's not that you are psychologically disconnected because of the miscarriage or body image issues. All right, medical intern, do we have any more email questions?
Yes. This one says, is it okay to have my anal exam while I'm on my period?
So the short answer to that is yes, right? You can get a pelvic exam. We can feel your uterus and your ovaries. You can have your breast exam. Now, the biggest issue with doing this, though, while you're on your period is that sometimes if you're somebody that has a heavy menstrual flow, that we may not be able to do your pap smear. So we can do your pelvic exam, meaning look at your cervix, do a bimanual exam, meaning feel how big your uterus is and feel your ovaries to see if they're enlarged. But blood can actually make it hard to collect cells off of your cervix. So if you're bleeding really heavily, it could come back with an inconclusive result. So most OBGYNs will look and do the pap smear if you're not bleeding super heavy. If you're going off of your period, yes, they can easily do that if you're very light. But if you have a heavy flow, that's when it's going to be like, hey, we can do all of your exam, but you just have to come back next week to do the pap smear portion of it. So that would be the only thing. It really just depends on how heavy your flow is if you can get your pap smear part of your annual exam. But your annual exam itself can be done while you're on your period. There's no need to reschedule that. All right, medical intern, any more questions?
Yes. This one says, I have genital herpes. How can I talk to my partner about it?
So this is already your partner, right? And so I would assume that if he's a partner, you've had this conversation. Unless you're just finding out you have genital herpes and it may be from your partner. So let's say the latter is the case. You went to your exam and you found out you now have new onset genital herpes. Well, that may mean that your partner gave it to you or you were exposed before your partner, depending on how long you've been with them. And now you just had your first primary outbreak. First, I would say, give yourself grace, give yourself time to breathe and to treat yourself. Second, don't have sex while you're in treatment. So if you're taking Valtrex for 10 days, get through that thing before you have sex. At least make sure both of you guys are treated and have no active lesions. My approach is always the direct approach. Okay. Hey, listen, I just found out I have genital herpes. You may have it because I didn't have it before you. Can we talk about you getting tested as well? Now, the issue is just because he doesn't have a lesion right now, doesn't mean that he was not the source of your outbreak. He could have had a lesion before that was sort of burning, itching. He didn't see it. After a couple of days, it went away. And then he had intercourse while he was still shedding. That is what possibly gave you genital herpes. We can't know. Okay. Or you could have had this and it's just been dormant. And now all of a sudden you have an outbreak. I would say if you're close enough to have sex with somebody, you're close enough to sit down and say, hey, I need to have a conversation that may not be the best one, but for your safety and mine, I think we need to talk about this. And then I would tell him, if this is your first outbreak, I would say, hey, I just found out I have genital herpes. I think you need to get tested. This could have been in me for years before I had an outbreak. Or you could be the person that gave it to me. I don't know. You got to have tough decisions, okay? Make tough decisions, put in your big girl drawers and say it. If you're afraid that you're going to be hurt or abused in some way because that person may take that news the wrong way, you can always talk to your provider about talking to both of you, okay? Because it's our job to make sure you understand your diagnosis. And if there's somebody else that could be involved with the diagnosis, your OB will be more than happy to talk to both of you guys about what this means for you, what this means for how many outbreaks you're going to have in the future, what this means for your partner and how he needs to be tested. So it may be a better thing to do is to ask your OBGYN, hey, can you break this news to both of us so that he could get tested and also ask all the questions that he wants to ask without us getting into a very heated discussion about where we got it from. So if you don't think that you can directly talk to your mate about, hey, this is what's going on with me, then get your provider involved so they can counsel both of you guys at the same time. All right, medical intern, any more email questions? And she's shaking her head no. So you guys, thank you so much for listening to Pregnancy Pearls Podcast. I hope you've got all the answers to your questions during this episode. And if you haven't, you can always contact me anytime. If you enjoyed the show, make sure to share me with your friends, rate, and comment. If you or someone you know has had a pregnancy complication or unique pregnancy situation, let me know about it. Email me at pregnancypearls@gmail.com to hear your topic or case discussed on one of our podcast episodes. Also, remember to follow me on Instagram at pregnancy_pearls. And Facebook at Pregnancy Pearls. You can also feel free to check out the website, which is www.drnicoleplenty.com for pregnancy downloadables and links to all of the podcast platforms. And for goodness sake, go ahead, catch up on all four seasons. Cause y'all, it's good. It's good information if I have to say so myself. In closing, remember to advocate for yourself. You are your biggest advocate, and no one knows what's going on with your body except for you. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Pregnancy Pearls is hosted by Dr. Nicole Lee Plenty. Produced by Nicole Plenty and Janine Brunson Johnson. Executive producer Ken Johnson. Find Pregnancy Pearls on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe and rate. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice for diagnosis or treatment of individual medical conditions. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with specific questions regarding a medical condition. Pregnancy Pearls is a Mean Old Lion Media production.